When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. UndercoverTourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to a very special show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our guest super producer, Max the Freight Train Williams. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Hang on, you might be thinking. Isn't this the weekly listener mail segment? What's going on? Is there no order in the world? Well, it's a kind of chaotic place, the world, but we are doing something a little bit different today. You've heard Matt, Noel, and yours truly talk about this book thing we did that we're really excited about, and it came out in an audiobook platform as well, or an audiobook format, I should say. And we decided... in one of our top secret think tanks to put our money where our mouths are or where your ears are.
Are you talking about that meeting we had in that dumpster the other day, the think tank?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's classier when we call it a think tank. But yes, it is a dumpster. It's a very nice dumpster. We have seats. We
call it the thinkster.
The thinkster. Yes, yes. It's where we dump our thoughts.
It's also where all the badgers hang out with us. They usually have, they contribute pretty well. But sometimes they get a little mouthy and we have to shove them back in the bags.
Back in the bag, badgers and bags. This is an excerpt from our actual audio book. And we went back and forth and we thought, you know, what's the best way to give people a taste of the kind of stuff we're talking about? And we decided we would pick just one chapter. And what you're about to hear is that chapter, sort of. We cut some stuff out.
We cut out 3 minutes.
Wait, no, Matt, don't tell. No.
3 bonus minutes, and that way there'll be something fresh for you when you go back.
That's right.
Listen to the audiobook in full or buy the book. And this segment is read with the dulcet tones of by the dulcet tones of Ben Bolin. The entire book has contributions from all three of us. And I also want to say, when Ben says a taste, he's not kidding. These audiobook producer people are sticklers. There's no styling on any of this. It is word for word what the book is. So this was a new experience, I think, for all of us. But that was a part that never really occurred to me, that like, because of certain search features in audiobooks and things like that, you have to read it verbatim so that they can reference it and match it back to the text.
Huge shout out to the engineers over at Lantern Audio in Atlanta, two producers we worked with, Verbe and Tim.
Mm-hmm. As well as Mark and Chris.
Oh, yeah. The, Mark and Chris were the actual guys. Verbe and Tim was supposed to be a joke, and I failed.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think you failed. I mean, we certainly didn't fail to do this book. And Noel, you're right. They are sticklers. But I'm going to go ahead and double down. These three mystery minutes that you're not hearing now, they're life changing, and you can only hear them through our audiobook, or if you check out our print book and read it out loud to yourself.
Make your own audiobook. It can be an activity for the whole family.
Be the change.
But really, get ready for
this.
Don't
try to sell it, because we will come for you.
No,
we are litigious.
No. Don't do that. Yes. But really, get ready for this. We're like, did you know the United States has been, correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe successfully backed in some way coups in countries across the world 35 times?
Yeah, minimum 35 proven times. So in our chapter on coups and assassinations, we look at some of these unpleasant facts, and we learn why assassinations continue to be a go-to tactic of governments around the world. There really are no good guys in geopolitics, and they're definitely doing the stuff they don't want you to know. So we hope you enjoy it. We can't wait to hear your thoughts. We'll be back at the very end of this excerpt.
Chapter 6, Coups and Assassinations. In the U.S. school system, many children are taught a carefully curated history of America, one that frames the nation as a champion of human rights and democracy, a country so committed to this ideology that it can and will take action to bring this ideology and, officially, its benefits to foreign shores, even when it wrestles with its own human rights issues domestically. It's often a story of heroes. And, as such, this narrative includes many of the tropes you'll find in the hero's journey. Yes, the teacher and textbooks readily admit, mistakes were made in the past, but lessons were learned, and the country is the better for this experience. While that may be broadly true, it's a story that misses a great deal of nuance, and at times purposely brushes past some of the most nefarious deeds of the United States, coups and assassinations. Let's start with coups. You've heard of them before, both in the annals of ancient history and in the modern age. During a coup d'etat, French for blow or stroke of state, a faction overthrows a government with the aim of installing rulers with differing priorities and policy goals. While the term entered English in the 19th century, the practice itself, just like propaganda, dates back to antiquity. Many countries, kingdoms, and empires have been subject to coups, or have instigated coups in other countries. Some coups may result in the downfall of an entire country, while others focus on gaining control over a strategic region. Many citizens of the United States have found it difficult to face up to their country's long involvement in coups, labeling attempts to understand these illegal attempts to overthrow foreign governments as conspiracy theories. Because the histories documenting these coups often originate in other countries, they are too often brushed aside or dismissed by the U.S. mainstream media. Unfortunately, the conspiracies are all too often real. At multiple points in history, from the 1800s to the present day, the United States has actively participated in or orchestrated coups, conspiring to overthrow multiple governments, some more than once. In the mid-1800s, for instance, the U.S. annexed the Republic of Texas, despite the fact that Mexico considered the region its sovereign territory.
This led to the Mexican-American War of 1846 to 1848, after which the U.S. also took the region that is now Nevada, Utah, Arizona, California, and much of New Mexico. In 1893, the U.S. conspired with local business interest to overthrow the Kingdom of Hawaii, eventually annexing it entirely in 1898. In 1903, the U.S. intervened in Central America, working with the Panama Canal Company to aid Panama's secession from the Republic of Colombia, one of the most prominent examples of Uncle Sam intervening in the affairs of nations in the Caribbean, Central, and South America. In some cases, U.S. forces sought to preserve a particular regime deemed friendly to U.S. interests. In other cases, U.S. leaders sought to overthrow existing governments, even when democratically elected, in favor of another regime more amenable to U.S. political and corporate interest. As the Cold War ramped up after World War II, reviving early 20th century fears of communism dominating the planet, these coups were often framed as moral necessities. These nefarious activities may not have been technically legal, it was reasoned, but they were ethically sound and crucial to further the greater good of freedom under capitalism. From the U.S. perspective, the world was increasingly divided into three camps: communist, anti-communist, and non-aligned countries, with the assumption being those countries in the third group would inevitably either rise to the level of democracy or fall into the clutches of an international communist order. The term First World initially described countries aligned with the U.S. and NATO in opposition to the Soviet Union or other communist governments. This worldview permitted the rationalization of illegal activities, up to and including preemptively overthrowing foreign governments if Western politicians believed those governments might fall under Soviet sway. In practice, these justifications were all too often revealed to be spurious. While many members of the political and military classes doubtlessly believed in the mission of spreading democracy, big business was inextricably intertwined with many of these initiatives, and often the idea of freeing a given nation was little more than a euphemism for aiding corporate activities in the region. Some members of the military became disillusioned with this pattern, most famously General Smedley Butler, 1881 to 1940. A Marine Corps veteran and author of War is a Racket, in which he alleged many of the foreign conflicts he'd been involved in were, in fact, conspiracies, exercises in resource extraction and racketeering. In an interview with Common Sense, a socialist magazine of the day, the retired general referred to himself as a gangster for capitalism, claiming that American interventions were ultimately meant to help the bottom line of banking houses, oil interests, fruit companies, and the like. This was a far cry from the reasons cited in the patriotic, idealistic speeches used to sell the American public on U.S. foreign policy. As a prolific public speaker and activist, Butler garnered massive support from veterans, leading multiple protests, and making no shortage of powerful enemies along the way. In time, he found himself embroiled in one last conspiracy: the business plot. In 1934, Butler stated he had been approached by agents representing a cabal of massively powerful business tycoons who sought to take his expertise in coups to American shores. Butler was contacted by Gerald McGuire, a member of the American Legion, who claimed to be serving the interest of the newly formed political lobbying group, the American Liberty League. This organization claimed to have no connection to Gerald Maguire and denied the allegations of a plot to overthrow the Roosevelt administration. Furious at then-President Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal policies, these businessmen wanted to stage a coup of their own, overthrowing the government and installing a new fascist regime in its place. At this time, fascism was an increasingly popular ideology for the ruling class of private industry in the U.S. Butler alleged this group had asked him to lead a private army of 500,000 men. His concerns were treated seriously, and he eventually spoke to a committee of Congress convened to explore whether the story was true. The committee was able to confirm some of Butler's claims in their final report, where they noted, "In the last few weeks of the committee's official life, it received evidence showing that certain persons had made an attempt to establish a fascist organization in this country. There is no question that these attempts were discussed, were planned, and might have been placed in execution when and if the financial backers deemed it expedient." Yet no further investigations followed. No one was ever prosecuted. The media of the time, itself often controlled by the same wealthy class, was quick to dismiss the story. Today, historians still go back and forth over how much of Butler's tale was true, and his warnings about what he saw as the hidden motivation for American adventurism abroad are often ignored. But were he alive today, it would likely not surprise Smedley Butler to learn the pattern he pointed to in War is a Racket continues. In Killing Hope, U.S. Military and CIA Interventions Since World War II, author William Blum meticulously outlines and explores some 55 different cases of U.S. efforts in this regard, each of which aimed to overthrow foreign governments, and most of which, he finds, were in fact democratically elected. It is tragically accurate to note that the freedom, liberty, and security the U.S. claimed to fight for was often little more than the freedom, liberty, and security of U.S.-backed corporations to do as they wished once a new government was installed, reaping massive profits while avoiding the threat of nationalization. Nationalization is the forced takeover of a business or entire industry by a government. These conspiracies were all genuine, and as time marched on, more and more evidence came to light to prove them so. The coup of Guatemala in 1954 is a textbook example of the process. In 1954, the Boston-based United Fruit Company was increasingly concerned about the political leadership of Guatemala. 10 years before, the people of the country had risen up on their own to overthrow the military dictatorship of Jorge Ubico. This was, simply put, a bummer for the leaders of United Fruit, who got along famously with Ubico's government. This company thrived off the agricultural trade, particularly bananas. In 1950, just a few years before the revolution, their annual profits were twice as large as the revenue of Guatemala's entire government. United Fruit Company revenues in 1950 were around $65 million. That's equivalent to almost $738 million in 2021. The company was also the largest single landowner in the country and wielded de facto control of Guatemala's only Atlantic port, creating another hefty revenue stream from international trade. Almost no part of this profit trickled down to the common workers, who were often treated as little more than serfs. Guatemala's revolutionaries were well aware of United Fruit's practices, which included discriminatory actions against impoverished Native workers, interference in domestic politics, and draconian economic practices. The new ruler, President Juan José Arévalo, instituted progressive reforms, things like a minimum wage, more voting rights, and other moves that curtailed some of the common labor exploitation practices United Fruit depended on for profit. United Fruit felt it was being specifically targeted. New labor laws meant workers could strike if their demands for better treatment weren't met. United Fruit had ignored multiple strikes in the past. The next Guatemalan president, Jacobo Arbenz, took things further after his election in 1951. He instituted land reforms, which granted property to the impoverished. The Guatemalan government's Decree 900 stated that all idle or uncultivated land could be part of this reform. According to the government, United Fruit had cultivated only some 15% of the 550,000 acres it owned, meaning the other 85% was up for grabs. This, again, posed a threat to United Fruit's bottom line. The company was at an existential crossroads. United Fruit's once unassailable stranglehold on the economy of Guatemala was eroding. The politicians they had bought were no longer relevant, and the nation they once ruled in all but name was closer and closer to showing them the door. They needed help, and they needed it quickly.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Luckily for United Fruit, intervention was an easy sell to Uncle Sam. The U.S. government was also not a fan of political developments in Guatemala, and the White House was worried the empowerment of Guatemala's workers signaled a slide into socialism and communism. This fear only intensified when Arbenz officially legalized the Guatemalan Party of Labor, a communist political party. It's important to note that Guatemalan leaders at the time saw themselves as anti-dictator, not necessarily communist in ideology.
United Fruit went into a lobbying overdrive, bending the ear of politicians and the president. U.S. politicians berated the new Guatemalan government for failing to protect the interest of United Fruit and other Western companies. Guatemala responded that, in its opinion, those companies, and United Fruit in particular, were by far the main obstacle to progress in its nation. By the time Truman was out and Eisenhower was elected in 1952, the figurative writing was on the wall. Tensions escalated. Arbenz showed no signs of returning his country to the easily exploited state of a dictatorship. Eisenhower's staff, particularly John Foster Dulles and Alan Welsh Dulles, urged intervention. The New York law firm Sullivan & Cromwell represented the United Fruit Company. John Foster Dulles, who served as U.S. Secretary of State from 1953 until 1959, was also a partner at Sullivan & Cromwell. John's brother, Alan Welsh Dulles, served as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency from 1953 until 1961. While the specter of communism was a convenient cover, the consensus in Washington's back rooms was that United Fruit and its shareholders must be protected. In 1953, the Guatemalan government expropriated 200,000 acres of land from United Fruit, offering the company compensation totaling more than twice what the company had originally paid. This hefty profit did not mollify United Fruit's executives. Nevertheless, Guatemala continued to reclaim more of UFC's uncultivated land. In a hilarious turn of events, it began to base its offered compensation on UFC's own previous valuations of the property. This was even more unsatisfactory for UFC because for years the company had been screwing over the Guatemalan tax system by massively undervaluing its own land. In a way, you could say United Fruit swindled itself. As Guatemala and UFC wrangled over land expropriation, a massive lobbying effort began with master propagandist Edward Bernays. As we learned in Chapter 5, Bernays is hailed as the father of public relations, a sort of Sith Lord of information control. Orchestrating a campaign to paint United Fruit as the undeserving victim of a merciless, hardline communist government. Bernays commissioned a bizarre report, a smear piece that he circulated through Congress. The report painted a frightening picture of a new, dangerously communist regime on the rise in Guatemala. All in all, United Fruit spent about $500,000 selling America and its rulers on the coup d'etat. It was money well spent. After a false start in 1952 with an operation called PB Fortune, which failed because the CIA was caught attempting to interfere with Guatemala by other factions of the U.S. government, the CIA and United Fruit were able to launch Operation PB Success just a few years later in 1954. This was a genuine, successful conspiracy on the part of the CIA and the United Fruit Company to overthrow the democratically elected government of Guatemala. The information war in the U.S. evolved into military action. The U.S. government trained insurgents, provided arms, and also received a list of people who would be murdered or exiled. In the aftermath of the coup, Guatemala went on to be ruled by a string of U.S.-backed military dictators leading up to the Guatemalan Civil War, which ended only in 1996. The ramifications of this coup echo throughout Guatemala today. This is only one example of a successful coup on the part of the U.S. government, though it is perhaps most notable for the amount of information available to the public about how this operation occurred. The United Fruit Company survived. It prospered. It exists today, rebranded as Chiquita Brands International. The company still sells bananas and remains controversial due to a number of shady activities, including things like allegedly paying off foreign terrorist groups. All in all, experts like William Blum estimate the U.S. has attempted to overthrow various world governments at least 57 times since the end of World War II. It hasn't always been successful, but its track record isn't short on big wins. Blum states there have been no fewer than 35 successful U.S.-backed coup d'états. 37 if you count three interventions in Laos as separate incidents. Were these victories for democracy and blows against the boogeyman of communism? Or is the ideological Overton window dressing of freedom and liberty just that, a disguise draped over the real motivation, the expansion of capitalism and the growth of corporate profits? It's a question historians continue to analyze. And while each case carries its own set of complications and intervening factors, they all share a similar theme. While the U.S. has, for a very long time, articulated a clear aspiration for a liberal, democratic world, it has often shown little compunction about making this vision a reality. Laws can and should be respected, so long as they don't get in the way of that greater good, however vaguely defined. Assassinations. In the early days of 2020, National Public Radio found themselves at the heart of a strange controversy. When the U.S. targeted Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in January of that year, news organizations were seriously concerned over how best to describe the U.S. role in the general's death. In common usage, murder means to kill someone, but legally it means an unlawful killing. The U.S. operation had all the hallmarks of an assassination, but still, some audience members objected when NPR used the phrase. It's controversial. Many people don't like to think of the good guys using assassins. Assassination is a uniquely awful form of murder. It is defined by target, motivation, and tactics. The target is typically a prominent public figure. While the assassin themselves may be in it only for the money, the people orchestrating the assassination typically have larger socio-political aims. Regime change, for example. While a robber may murder a cashier in the course of a crime, they're not doing so with the goal of changing public discourse or a nation's government. But someone who fatally attacks the President of the United States is an assassin. This distinction may seem like a trivial game of semantics, but it's a big deal. In some cases, it can have legal implications. Politically motivated killings are familiar to cultures across the planet and throughout the ages. From John Wilkes Booth to Locusta the Poisoner, you don't have to look far to find historical records of assassins. The Encyclopedia of Assassinations by Carl Safakis explores both attempted and successful assassinations throughout human history and across the planet. The term assassin dates back to a real, ancient organization known as the Order of Assassins. A great deal of the stories about this order are either fancifully embellished or outright fabricated. Their fortress was conquered in 1256, and their records were destroyed, so no accounts from the order itself exist in the modern day. Much of the contemporaneous writing about the assassins comes from their enemies, such as Syrian Sunni chroniclers. These accounts are biased because the Syrian Sunnis despised the assassins, for good reason. For example, the connection between assassins and marijuana use was almost certainly a smear tactic, and there's no credible link between the order and this drug. However, we do know a few things for certain. Between 1090 and 1275, a small Shia sect called the Nizari Ismaili, located high in the mountains of Persia and Syria, went into the murder business. This sect was founded by Hassani Sabah, who referred to his followers as Asasayun, which means people who are faithful to the foundation of the faith. They were based in a fortress called Alamut Castle, about 130 miles from modern-day Tehran. The Nizari Ismaili sought to challenge the Seljuk Turks, Sunni Muslims who were in control of Persia at the time. This is when the group first became known as the Hashashin. This group actively and covertly murdered Muslim and Christian leaders throughout the Middle East who were deemed to be enemies of the state or the order. While assassins typically refers to the entire sect, only a select group of disciples known as the Fida'i actually engaged in conflict. The Nizari did not have a standing army, so they relied on these warriors to carry out espionage and assassinations of key enemy figures. While the reputation of the assassins was built largely on exaggerations by their enemies, the impact of this small sect and its effective tactics struck fear into mighty powers and, perhaps most importantly, has inspired imitators ever since. So, knowing the bizarre history of the term assassin, we have to ask, how much of their strategy informed similar activities in the modern day? Assassinations still occur. With so much new technology in play and so much more communication between world powers, it's easy to assume that someone, at some point, must have said, hey, we should make assassination illegal, right? Well, unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be entirely true. According to the political ethicist Michael L. Gross, assassination can be more or less perfectly legal. He writes, international law does not ban assassination unequivocally, but instead prohibits perfidy, or those acts that abuse the protections that the laws of armed conflict guarantee. Common examples of perfidy include attacking from under the protection of a white flag or harming combatants who lay down their arms. These protections are integral to modern warfare and underlie the conventions of surrender. Without them, war would end only in extermination or the proverbial fight to the death. Assassination is perfidious only insofar as it abuses these or similar protections. So, in this sense, assassination is fine, just as long as you obey certain rules. Assassination remains a viable tactic for governments for one simple, troubling fact. It works. Assassinations, or if you prefer, targeted killings, have fundamentally altered the course of human history. In Russia alone, 5 emperors were assassinated within less than 200 years. Ivan VI, Peter III, Paul I, Alexander II, and Nicholas II, along with his wife, Alexandra, daughters Olga, Tatiana, Maria, and Anastasia, and son Alexei. With each murder sparking instability and chaos in the region. Another example, 6 of the 12 Caesars were assassinated, with each death marking a shift in the governance of the Roman Empire. The most notable assassination victim in U.S. history was President Abraham Lincoln. 3 other U.S. presidents have been killed by assassination since: James Garfield, William McKinley, and John F. Kennedy. In Europe, the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand by Gavrilo Princip, one of several Serb nationalist insurgents, triggered World War I.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
It's tricky to say how history would have played out if these and other murders had not occurred. The stage was already set for World War I. Lincoln had already made a lasting impact on the U.S. and so on. But we will never know what would have happened had these and other political leaders remained alive for their natural lifespan. What we do know is this. Multiple countries have committed, do commit, and likely will commit assassinations in the future. The United States is no exception. Given the deeply ingrained distrust of government and love of conspiracy so common in American culture, it should come as no surprise that one of the country's most popular, prevalent, and long-lived conspiracy theories is centered around an assassination. Who really killed President John Fitzgerald Kennedy? In the world of conspiracy lore, the idea that sinister forces assassinated President Kennedy, and later his brother Robert Kennedy, looms large. It's one of the most widely believed conspiracy tales in the United States, and for good reason. First, there are several strange aspects to the story. You can call them discrepancies, complications, or coincidence. Since the day of Kennedy's assassination, on November 22, 1963, Gallup has tracked public opinion about the murder. Its first poll, taken immediately after the assassination, found that 52% of Americans believed others were involved in the incident, and only 29% believed Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. Though this number has waxed and waned over the years, recent polls from Gallup and 538 indicate that today, nearly 60 years since the murder, well over half of the American public believes there was a conspiracy afoot.
A 2019 poll from Associated Press GFK found that 59% of Americans think multiple people were involved in a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy. If the officials seem universally aligned on the same conclusion, why do so many people have a problem with the story? First, there are the numerous inconsistencies in the findings. During his time with the Assassination Records Review Board, Dr. T. Jeremy Gunn was surprised to learn that some of the medical evidence was dubious. The Assassination Records Review Board was created by the President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Collection Act of 1992. Only a year or so after filmmaker Oliver Stone debuted JFK, his conspiratorial take on Kennedy's murder. The board was expressly formed to re-examine assassination-related records federal agencies felt were still too sensitive to share with the public. During a deposition with Dr. James Joseph Humes, one of three doctors who performed the autopsy on Kennedy's corpse, Dr. Gunn learned the medical team skipped some basic steps of a normal autopsy. Dr. Humes also stated he'd made a copy of the original autopsy, destroying the first document when he realized it bore bloodstains. Dr. Gunn found additional discrepancies, what he calls serious problems with the forensic and ballistic evidence, as well as the troubling discovery that the official photos of Kennedy's corpse stored in the National Archives do not appear to be the original photos. These facts do not point inevitably to conspiracy. First, this murder investigation received much more scrutiny than an everyday homicide, and to a degree it's logical that it would continue to receive heightened scrutiny in the decades following. It is not uncommon for homicide investigations to have discrepancies, inaccuracies, and missing paperwork, and these problems, when discovered, don't automatically send people into the land of conspiracy. At the same time, mistrust of the government is as American as apple pie. Apples are originally from Kazakhstan. And since parts of the investigation remain classified today, that lack of transparency, coupled with an ingrained lack of trust, makes dense, fertile soil for speculation. Belief in conspiracies surrounding the Kennedy assassination also seems to know no real political divide. In 2017, about 59% of Hillary Clinton's supporters believed in a conspiracy surrounding the death, and about 61% of Donald Trump's supporters were on the same page. The most prevalent conspiracy theories surrounding the Kennedy assassination can be grouped into a few broad categories. The Mafia killed Kennedy. Fidel Castro killed Kennedy. The CIA, or then Vice President Lyndon Johnson, or both working in concert, killed Kennedy. On the more extreme end of the spectrum, we find people claiming shadowy cabals like the Illuminati killed Kennedy, or that the president somehow never actually died. It's a fascinating, deep rabbit hole of conjecture, and the theories often contradict each other on the most basic of assumptions. There is, however, one commonality. Lee Harvey Oswald, all the popular theories state, did not act alone. Theorists also tend to place great weight on Oswald's own death. He was murdered on November 24, 1963, by a local nightclub owner named Jack Ruby. Ruby died while awaiting a retrial on January 3, 1967. Again, over half of the American public believes some version of these stories, and since 1963, they've never quite gone away. And the 1968 assassination of JFK's brother, New York Senator Robert Kennedy, only added more fuel to the fire of speculation. while declassifying all outstanding information regarding the assassination would be a big step toward dispelling some of the wilder claims, it's possible that even full transparency wouldn't be enough to stem the tide of speculation. This is because, regardless of what evidence has been produced or will be produced regarding one of history's most infamous assassinations, one profoundly disturbing, inarguable fact remains. The United States has assassinated people. It, like other countries, likely will assassinate more people in the future if it deems such actions appropriate. But the U.S. is not infallible. Just as with the pattern of attempted coup d'états, the U.S. assassination track record features its own collection of blunders and failures. The most famous of these was probably Uncle Sam's long-running mission to assassinate Cuban President Fidel Castro. Over the course of decades, multiple U.S. administrations tried increasingly bizarre and outlandish methods to end Castro's life. Poison smuggled in cold cream, botulinum toxin-laced cigars, a syringe of lethal substances hidden in a pen. The CIA reached out to mafia syndicates in the U.S., seeking to arrange a hit. Some of the plots focused on character assassination, essentially deciding that, if the man couldn't be killed, discrediting him was the next best thing. What if thallium salt could destroy his facial hair? Could LSD be piped into his recording studio, causing him to hallucinate on air? The last documented attempt on Castro's life occurred in 2000 while he was on a trip to Panama. His personal security guards discovered a cache of explosives hidden under a podium. This attempt also failed. This list of farcical misfires points to one reason we should be skeptical of many assassination conspiracy theories. How can the same government capable of orchestrating and carrying out a convoluted plot to kill its own president, including a sweeping multi-generational cover-up of that act, also be so incompetent that it could not kill another world leader, despite more than 600 separate attempts? Specifically 634, according to Fabian Escalante, the former chief of Cuba's counterintelligence initiatives. Nevertheless, we are faced with the undeniable fact that members of the United States government are capable of ordering, planning, and carrying out the execution of political leaders. And this fact has led many people in the U.S. and around the world to believe that such extraordinary actions are not as uncommon as we might think, nor restricted to foreign leaders. This brings us to another infamous, untimely death, the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Born in Atlanta, Georgia, in 1929, Martin Luther King, Jr. was a minister, activist, and one of the most prominent leaders of the American civil rights movement. From the Montgomery bus boycott of 1955 up until his death, Dr. King fought tirelessly to further the cause of equality for all residents of America, regardless of their race, ethnicity, income, or political stance. Dr. King was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, on April 4, 1968. Investigations of the murder concluded King was killed by veteran and petty criminal James Earl Ray, using a Remington rifle to which he attached the scope. Riots ensued across the country. As in the case of Kennedy's assassination, a significant portion of the public did not accept the government's conclusions, and a large percentage of the American population today considers U.S. involvement in King's murder to be a kind of open secret. Critics of the official narrative, including King's surviving relatives, argue that King was purposely targeted for assassination by branches of the federal government and the mafia. In 1999,
The King family brought and won a civil suit in which the jury agreed that Dr. King's death was the result of a conspiracy by a coffee shop owner named Lloyd Jowers, who had been hired by a mafia-affiliated Memphis resident, Frank Liberto. Jowers claimed the Memphis police and a man known only as Raul also participated. According to Jowers, Ray was framed to take the fall, and the actual shooter was Earl Clark, a Memphis police officer. The court granted the King family $100 in damages. This ruling prompted the Department of Justice, DOJ, to reopen the case. The next year, the DOJ stated it found no evidence of a conspiracy. Furthermore, the department found there was no proof Frank Liberto was a mafioso. Jowers' own statements didn't add up, and his witnesses couldn't get their story straight. The department also noted Jowers was being paid for media appearances related to the assassination and questioned his motives. By the time the DOJ issued this announcement, the public had already learned about COINTELPRO. The federal government may not have killed Dr. King, but it certainly worked to ruin him. COINTELPRO, short for Counterintelligence Program, was an FBI initiative originally intended to discover and disrupt communist activity in the United States. The program began in 1956 and existed in secrecy until 1971. It also experienced mission creep, expanding its scope from communism to include surveillance and disruption operations against virtually any groups believed to be a threat to national security. The definition of national security also broadened, as was convenient, coming to mean, in practice, anything the FBI perceived as a threat to the existing status quo. This included things like far-right hate groups, as well as left-wing civil rights initiatives. COINTELPRO broke laws in the service of what it saw as the greater good, and did so successfully. Ultimately, it would take an independent crime to bring these crimes to light. The American public first learned of COINTELPRO not through declassified documents or a whistleblower, but from a good old-fashioned heist. In 1971, an outfit called the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI broke into an FBI field office in Media, Pennsylvania, making off with over 1,000 documents containing classified information and later passed material describing COINTELPRO to reporters. Many news agencies initially refused to publish the evidence, concerned that, as it related to ongoing government activities, going public might threaten the lives of the agents and others involved in the operations. The Washington Post became the first to break the story, running their report on March 24, 1971. Wynn magazine published an expose on the break-in in March 1972, with a piece showing the complete collection of the stolen documents. This treasure trove of information provided indisputable evidence that the FBI was conducting criminal acts, including the use of switchboard operators and postal workers to spy on nonviolent black activist groups, black college students, two right-wing groups, and more than 200 left-leaning groups. COINTELPRO also targeted Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in a conspiracy to discredit his activities and, if possible, prompt him to take his own life. Perhaps most infamously, in 1964, King's wife, Coretta Scott King, received an anonymous package containing recordings of King's alleged sexual activities outside of marriage, as well as a letter that King believed was attempting to persuade him to commit suicide. King believed this letter and the recording were the work of the FBI.
In the wake of COINTELPRO's public exposure, the Church Committee conducted a series of hearings and investigations, eventually uncovering evidence that seemed to confirm King's suspicions. The 1975 Senate Select Committee to Study Governmental Operations with Respect to Intelligence Activities, also known as the Church Committee because it was chaired by Frank Forrester Church III, investigated alleged illegal activities carried out by the National Security Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. A copy of the anonymous letter was found in the work files of Deputy FBI Director William C. Sullivan. This means that, while the U.S. denies any involvement with the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the government inarguably did instigate and pursue a conspiracy against him, illegally spying on his activities, conducting smear campaigns, and doing a number of, at the very least, highly unethical things to discredit his standing in the civil rights movement and in the general public eye. With this in mind, it's no wonder that so many people believe Dr. King was murdered by some faction of the government, or that members of some government agencies may have had, at least, knowledge of his impending death. And with this information, it's also not particularly surprising that the jury in Memphis agreed. The jury, which was made up of 6 black and 6 white jurors, reached a unanimous verdict. These assassinations are 2 of the most famous alleged to have been carried out by the U.S. government. But they're far from the only examples, both in the United States and abroad. Again, consider the assassination of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in 2020, or the numerous leaders who, like Salvador Allende in Chile, died during coups organized by the CIA. Assassination remains a viable tool for governments, criminal organizations, and terrorist groups alike. And assassinations are, by their very nature, inherently conspiratorial. Countries often don't like to be openly associated with these acts of murder, and commonly employ proxies to obfuscate their direct involvement. The problem with many JFK and MLK theories is that theorists often interpret a lack of evidence as a form of evidence itself. If evidence doesn't exist, it's not because there is no proof of a conspiracy. It's because the proof has been destroyed or hidden by the nefarious government bureaucrats behind the assassination plot. The goalpost can continually move. And if evidence that contradicts a conspiracy theory is revealed, as in our earlier examples, there would still be people claiming this exonerating evidence was doctored or manufactured. The latter scenario is rare in any case. The truth? It is highly unlikely the American public will ever be given full access to classified information regarding the investigations of the MLK and Kennedy assassinations. That absence of transparency, even when there are valid security reasons for secrecy, functions as high-test fuel for the engine of public conjecture. Imperfect transparency is still better than nothing, but speculation of government involvement in these assassinations will only continue to thrive in the coming decades.
There it is. We hope you enjoyed this chapter on coups and assassinations, minus the mysterious 3 minutes. And you might be haunted right now by how strange the world is. And you might be asking yourself, how do I find this 3 minutes you guys are hiding from me?
We can help you with that. On October 11th, as my monster truck announcer voice, but it was sort of lackluster, the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know book and audiobook will be unleashed, dare I say, released on the public, the unsuspecting, or in your case, suspecting public. And we'd really appreciate if you bought
those things. I think sometimes it's cool to have both, because it really is, you know, you're going to get a chance to hear us fumble our way through an audiobook reading. And I think we all did a fine job. I don't know why I'm being self-deprecating there on all of our behalves. That was inappropriate of me. But seriously, it is something. There is something to being able to listen to it. This is the kind of book you can also reread. I mean, it really is like the actual physical book really just looks really nice on your coffee table, with illustrations by our dear friend, mural artist, graphic designer extraordinaire, Nick Admiral Turbo Benson. It is a lovely piece to have at your house and to give as gifts to your friends and family.
This is what you do. Download that audiobook, you know, after paying for it. You got to pay for it. Then put some beats behind the words. That's what I want to hear. I want to see on social somewhere one of our voices, or more of our multiple voices of ours, behind some really just dope beat that you've created or found. So see if you can make that happen.
Like so.
Just use that one. Just use that one.
No. Give us all, you know, give us trap flavor, reggaeton, you know, yeah. A little bit of jungle, you know, whatever. Any dope beats will do.
Oh, yeah. Or what is something that's really, like, sensual?
They call that conspiratorial healing, baby.
A quiet storm, right? Stuff they don't want you to know after dark. Crying, loving, or leaving, we're glad you're here. We cannot wait to hear your opinions. As we said, the audiobook, they're out. Check out the art. We are very fortunate to be joined with the one and only Admiral Turbo Benson. This is a true story. We were able to pull him away from Run the Jewels. So apologies to our fellow Atlantan, Killer Mike. But we hope you enjoy the book as well. That's it for today, folks. We'll be back with listener mail next week. In the meantime, we want you to be part of the show. You're the most important part of this whole crazy endeavor. So join up with us. Become a conspiracy realist. We try to be easy to find online.
Lock arms, the internet. Reach out. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. And you can find us on YouTube, where things are soon to be afoot. Keep an eye on that space, as the kids say. Do the kids say that? Who says that? No one says that. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But you can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on those platforms. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram, where there is currently stuff afoot. So just watch that space. You know, just go to it. Instagram, Conspiracy Stuff Show.
And we got a phone number. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. Call in. It's a voicemail. You got 3 minutes. Say whatever you want. Give yourself a moniker. And let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you don't
want a monocle?
A monocle, yeah. Give yourself a monocle. Yes, yes. Uh-huh. Give yourself a monocle and a moniker. Moniker, monocle. I should do my warm-ups before we're in the actual recording session. Okay.
Wormhole monocle.
Yes. And if you don't want to do that stuff, you don't like your phone, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal, or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.